3, 2, 1, 0. From the studios of WORQ in Wisconsin, this is the Stand Up for the Truth podcast. Today's issues, overlooked headlines, and biblical observations, equipping the remnant around the globe. Got your sword handy? This is Stand Up for the Truth.
Fresh new podcast today, Tuesday, March 12, 2024. I'm Crash. Mary Danielson, welcome back to the host mic.
Thank you. Good to be here.
I trust you're awake and refreshed.
Yes. Refreshed? Yes. Awake? I make no promises.
All right. It's headlines today.
It is.
Fan favorite.
It is headline day today, and it's a bit of a mixed bag. As always, I like to shake things up a little bit, and I'm going to talk a little bit about my trip in the context of something that I'm going to read the verses, and it has to do with these verses. So I'm just going to jump in this morning with my scripture, which is Revelation 21, 1 to 4. And it says, "Now I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and there was no more sea. Then I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from heaven saying, 'Behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he will dwell with them, and they shall be his people. God himself will be with them and be their God. And God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There shall be no more death, nor sorrow, nor crying. There shall be no more pain, for the former things have passed away.'" Oof. Great verses. Let's pray this morning. Would you pray with me? Lord, we come to you today completely dependent upon you for our very breath. We thank you that you keep us, give us all we need for life, and promise to safely deliver us home when our time here is through. We not only thank and praise you for this, but we ask that you direct our steps and show us each day how to serve you in ever-increasing capacities. Thank you, Lord, for your Holy Spirit who guides us into all truth. We lift up those who are suffering with illness or grieving loss and ask that you uphold them. Grant them peace and grace in Jesus' name. Amen. It's great to be back. As they say, it's fun to go away on vacation, but it's always great to be back. Now, I just spent the better part of 2 weeks in one of my favorite places, which includes a view of the sun rising over the Atlantic when I get up every morning. And I've always loved the sea and the effect that it has on me physically and spiritually. The oceans cover 70% of the earth, and there's an abundance of minerals in them. The majority of Earth's minerals originate in the sea, and it contributes to a relaxed state of mind, and not to mention how soothing it is to hear and watch the rhythm of the waves. Now, these yearly getaways allow us not only to refresh and reboot, but to ponder a specific aspect of creation, one that is awe-inspiring, at least to me. And we love watching the dolphins and beach combing for hints in the sand of the creatures that live in the sea. Now, a year ago, in the same place, I found myself suddenly thinking at length about Revelation 21, and there was no more sea. And it just came to my mind one day as I was watching a hostile, churning ocean. And I was still cogitating and meditating on this during this trip, being from the land of the Great Lakes, which we are up here, which can be very unpredictable also. We don't often think on the oceans, so I get a chance to watch the tides and consider the array of species in it. And I also marvel at that in the deepest depths, there are some pretty wild-looking fish. The ones farthest down are bioluminescent, meaning they create their own light. And it wasn't until recently we've been able to see these creatures who live and move in 333 million cubic miles of water. Just incredible creation. In an average liter of seawater, there are 38,000 different species of microbial life. And in the deepest depths of the sea, there are 17,000 species of animals that live entirely without sunlight or natural light. They say there's enough gold in the ocean, whether it's dissolved or underneath the ocean, for each person on Earth to have 9 pounds of gold. Now, I don't know how they know that, but that's out there. The oceans are one continuous body of water. Now, they're divided by oceanographers into specific areas just for the sake of geographical reference. Now, that's the scientific view, but we still tend to say that there are seven seas. Genesis 1:6 definitively says that God made the land to divide the waters from the waters, and he saw that it was good. Just tuck that in your brain for a little bit, verse 10. But as much as I love the ocean, I found it took my mood for a bit of a dive over this verse. What was that about? Was the Lord trying to show me something? And I couldn't let it go. No more sea in the new heavens and the new earth. And I don't see any reason not to take that literally. I think a great Bible study might be all the dozens of verses about the oceans and the waves. And I'm going to undertake that when I get the time. But actually, as I thought it through, I realized that in spite of the tendency that humans have to romanticize going to sea and sailors and all that, as have countless poets and authors over the centuries, a great aspect of the seas is one of turbulence, peril, and an unpredictable nature that can and should strike fear in anyone who tries to traverse it. And many do sail the sea, and they make their living by it. Now, when we're there, we see these massive cargo ships come and go at all hours of the day, and their lights have a bit of a haunting effect on a pitch-black sea all night long. I could stand there and watch that all night and listen to the roaring of the waves. So I thought, as I thought about this six-word verse, and there was no more sea, I thought about death and a stark finality about its icy depths. The sea holds a lot of human and creature secrets, and a lot of darkness. And the more I thought about it, Revelation 20:13 sprang to mind, which says, "And the sea gave up the dead who were in it. Death and Hades delivered up the dead that were in them, and they were judged according to their works." Wow. I don't think we can possibly understand that in this life with our finite brains, but that's a powerful verse. And I sense the Lord is speaking to me in a powerful way, because God knows where every molecule of every person is who has perished in the seas, and he will resurrect them in the same way that those who are in the grave will be resurrected. Now, how many, this sparked another question in my mind, how many have died in the seas since creation? A pretty large number, considering all those who made their living by the sea or traveled the seas, since mankind ever had an ounce of curiosity about going outside their own borders to faraway lands where potential untold riches awaited them. Could it be as high as about 15 million? And that's just one speculation from researching this. I went down that rabbit trail, and I would say that easily that amount, considering population estimates from Adam to now are about 100 billion people. So that 15 million is only a tiny fraction of 1% of people who ever lived. So that's, if that's accurate, it's probably pretty close. Could be a little bit more. Excuse me. So we consider those who perished in sunken ships, naval wars, island inhabitants swept away by hurricanes and tsunamis, miscellaneous swimming accidents, aerial warfare, general plane crashes. That's a lot of people. And so for my personal conclusions, the seas, as majestic and beautiful as they are, represent mystery and darkness, death and separation. Alternately, the new earth, we're told, will be vastly different than this present one. And notice those verses that I read contain no death, no sorrow, no crying, no pain, no separation, no more 70% water. We're talking about a new geography. So as I think on this, I learn more and more to number my days, touch this world ever so lightly, send my heart ahead to heaven, and even vacations can cause us to long for eternity in an ever-deepening way, because they afford us the opportunity to shut the world out for a few days and listen for that still small voice. So, as I let the world back in now, I'm not finding a whole lot of anything to my liking, and that's no surprise to any of us, I'm sure. That's nothing new. But we're going to look at a couple of topics today. So that's my take on, "And there was no more sea." Great verses, worth meditating on. All right. Last week, and this is what I think probably one of the bigger events that happened while I was gone, Last week, the pundits and Americans in general didn't find anything praiseworthy in that State of the Union address. What a disaster. And an even bigger view of one of the worst presidents in U.S. history. That is my two cents on that. Not only did Americans behold this train wreck, but the world saw it too. So the curtain, you know, was parted, and we got a good view of something that was very, very ugly. On Front Page Magazine, Daniel Greenfield, he's one of my favorite reads over the years. He gave us a few noteworthy stats on it, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this because it was last week, and I think a lot of us have parsed it out as much as we care to. But he tells us what he really thinks, and this article is entitled, Biden Uses State of the Union to Threaten Civil War. And the subtitle is, Not Even Obama Violated Political Norms the Way Biden Just Did. And this is from 3 days ago. Joseph Biden began his final State of the Union address by invoking FDR, but while Biden has nearly as much trouble getting around as FDR, he didn't lead a nation out of a depression, but into one. And he didn't win a war, but he did, however, lose several, including a personal war with his diction and the teleprompter at the State of the Union. His addresses have gotten longer as he's had less to say. Last year's State of the Union was the eighth longest on record, and this year's clocks in just behind Obama's 2010 rant. The only reason it wasn't even longer is that Biden rushed to get through it, mumbling and slurring words, rattling off threats and insults at a speed that made them all but impossible to understand. Usually presidents use the podium to make promises and take credit for past accomplishments. But there's not much of that here, so Biden began his speech name-dropping presidents who people liked better than him, a long list, and threatening and berating Republicans. A few breaths after implicitly comparing himself to FDR during World War II, he then compared himself to Lincoln during the Civil War. Quote, not since President Lincoln and the Civil War have freedom and democracy been under assault here at home as they are today, end quote. And then President Reagan before launching an attack on Trump. The State of the Union isn't a place to attack opposing candidates. Bush didn't take pot shots at Kerry in his speech, and even Obama didn't mention Romney in his. And yet Biden attacked Trump a few minutes in and did it again and again. This was not a State of the Union address. It was a fascistic campaign rally of the kind he's been giving for years while flanked by Marines at Independence Hall before the 2022 midterms declaring war on Trump, Republicans, and all political opponents. After accusing Republicans of being enthralled to Russia and then being insurrectionists, he falsely claimed they were preventing women from getting IVF procedures. That's in vitro fertilization. That was then followed by attacking Republicans over abortion. None of this material belongs in a State of the Union address, which is not a campaign rally, but a presidential review of the year and calls for bipartisan cooperation on national priorities. No president has ever delivered a deranged partisan hate fest of a speech like this at the State of the Union. Not even Obama went that far. Not even Obama violated the State of the Union's norms. Biden's State of the Union rant would have been more ominous if it also hadn't been pathetic. The speech writers reached for the grandiose, but it came off as bellicose, and in Biden's mouth, even the bellicose became the quavering rattlings of an angry old man who spent too much time reading Stephen Ambrose and listening to NPR. It goes on to say his address had to be reconstructed from the transcript because people did not understand it. He claimed that our economy is the envy of the world, that inflation is the lowest in the world, there is historic job growth, and unemployment is at 50-year lows. Clearly, he does not buy his own groceries. And Daniel says, why didn't Biden begin by bragging about these incredible accomplishments? Why bury them in the middle of the speech? Not only because not only are they lies, but no one believes them. Since no one believes them, he moved on to promising free stuff. A cap on prescription drug costs, more tax credits for mortgages, universal pre-K, student loan payoffs. But there is no money for any of that. And then Daniel wraps it up by saying, in between attacking Republicans, he also attacked Israel for not caring enough about Palestinians and promised to lead an emergency mission to bail out Gaza. He demanded Congress take away our guns to beat the NRA and promised transgenders, I have your back. He violated the most elementary State of the Union decorum. He gave a speech that he should not have been allowed to deliver, and it should have been shut down during. Can you imagine that? If somebody had the nerve to actually shut that stuff down. He is a guest of Congress. Presidents deliver these addresses are guests of Congress. He insulted his host and tried to wrap his hate fest in name-dropping and the flag. The future sure looks like a senile president arriving at a State of the Union to launch vitriolic attacks on the opposition, wrecking political norms, implying that a new civil war is at hand, and threatening the Supreme Court, and defining all opposition as treason. Americans have seen the future, and polls show they don't like it very much. He says he wants to be a president for all Americans. We all know that that's not true. And Daniel says he wanted to be FDR. Instead, he's doomed to be the worst possible combination of LBJ, Obama, and Jimmy Carter, with all of their bad points and none of their good ones. A political hack who bungled everything and accomplished nothing, hated by everyone, loved by no one. Tell us what you really think, Daniel Greenfield. And he ends with this. His legacy concludes with a series of unhinged, mean-spirited rants in which he demands absolute power to save the country from the threat of political dissent. Americans would be scared if they could understand what he's saying. It's best for everyone that they didn't. Well, I'm not sure if I agree with that necessarily. I think we all know where he's at. But like I said at the beginning of this article, now the whole world knows where he's at. And I don't know. We are certainly the laughingstock of the world. And we wonder why America is dissolving faster than Coca-Cola on a rusty Chevy. All right. Going to move on here. Day 156 of the Israeli war. And there's an article with that name. Actually, it's day 153, but we are at day 156. And this article is a short one, written by Yanni Gilboa. And he is the director of Zaka Tel Aviv, which is a search and rescue organization that operates in 21 Israeli cities. The IDF and the Israeli police use them regularly to minimize casualties in any given situation, particularly this war, but also natural disasters and terror attacks. And it's a very short read, but it's an update of what's going on from March the 7th. And things are cranking up. And he says, the conflict surrounding Israel has taken a concerning turn, with new developments indicating an expansion beyond the ongoing war in Gaza. Last night, the IDF responded to rocket fire from Syria toward the Golan Heights by striking two Syrian army sites in southern Syria, just 6 miles from the Israeli-Syrian border. This marks a significant escalation in the region, bringing Syria into the fold of the already tense situation. Meanwhile, this morning, the Israeli Air Force, IAF, launched attacks on Hezbollah military targets in southern Lebanon. This was in addition to strikes on a military structure and observation post in the Jebayin area following cross-border launches into Israeli territory as tensions with Hezbollah and Lebanon's potential for full-scale war. This is a terrifying prospect, one that could escalate the conflict to a much greater scale than what's been witnessed in Gaza. And I read him because I think he is very reliable. They are all over the country doing their rescue things, and I think that they have a good take on what's going on. And there's another article here from All Israel News that confirms what I just read from them, from Yanni Gilboa. But this is All Israel News, and this is just a confirmation that there is more going on. And it says, Hezbollah fires over 60 rockets at Israel. IDF holds drills to prepare for approaching Lebanon war. And I think this has been the fear all along, that it would be a much wider conflict with no end in sight. And alas, I think we're just about there. This article from All Israel News says, the Lebanese terror group Hezbollah fired over 60 rockets at northern Israel on Sunday, while Israel Defense Forces announced it held a large logistics drill in preparation for a full-scale confrontation with the terror group, which seems to get ever closer. Hezbollah claimed responsibility for at least 11 attacks on Sunday, including two barrages of over 30 rockets. The first rocket salvo of some 30 Grad rockets struck near an IDF air control base on Mount Meron, with footage on social media showing the impact of around 10 rockets in open areas near the base. The terror group claimed the attacks were a response to IDF strike in Kirbet Salem on Saturday night, which killed 5 members of a family, including the father and 2 sons who were members of Hezbollah. On the Israeli side, the IDF continued its policy of shelling areas from where attacks were launched with artillery. In addition, fighter jets and other aircraft struck an anti-tank missile squad during operations for the attack. Hezbollah announced that since last Thursday, it has launched over 20 attacks against Israel, including Grad, Birkin rockets, anti-tank missiles, and attack drones. While diplomatic efforts to resolve the tense situation continue, the Israeli army is preparing for a likely increasing escalation. And that's pretty much it. I think the thing that probably disturbs us all on a humanitarian level is the hostages. I can only imagine what's going on there. And so we need to continue to pray for them and pray for God having his perfect will in this. Because some days you just can't understand the reason for a lot of this, and especially with the humanitarian. Now, the Palestinians, Gaza, they're saying that there are over 30,000 Gazans, civilians, who have died. Some are saying today that, that's way overinflated. I don't really know, but that's kind of where the numbers are at. So keep an eye on this. Also, because Ramadan started Sunday night, so that adds more fuel to this raging fire. Reuters News tells us about Ramadan. Palestinians prepared for Ramadan in a somber mood, with heightened security measures by Israeli police and the specter of war and hunger in Gaza overshadowing the normally festive Muslim holy month as talks to secure a ceasefire stalled. Thousands of police have been deployed around the narrow streets of the Old City in Jerusalem, where tens of thousands of worshippers are expected every day at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound, one of the holiest sites in Islam. So it sounds like they are possibly expecting trouble. And like I said, that's added on to an already tense situation that's not going away. Now, I want to add something to this mix. On Sunday, I was very surprised, and I'm probably going to have to carry this over after the break, but I want to start this. I've never seen this mentioned on the national news. On Sunday, CBS News ran a piece about three red heifers born in 2022 and currently kept in a secret location in Israel. I want to reference three different articles on this. Now, I have hesitated to give this a lot of time in the past. I haven't paid a lot of attention to it because there have been, over several years, many efforts to secure a red heifer, and I'm going to talk about why this is meaningful, to sacrifice and signal the rebuilding of the temple. But there's always been a disqualifying feature of these cows, and I will talk about that too. But now, there's been a somewhat surprising announcement that a red heifer will be sacrificed on Passover this year, barring some issue with purity. I think that's a fairly new development. So I decided to educate myself on this status. And like I said, it's a topic I take a wait-and-see stance on, but it keeps coming up. And to draw attention to it on the national news, I thought was very strange. But of course, I think the war made that rise to the top. So first, a couple of articles, and then the CBS piece, which was predictably put through the spin cycle. But I think this is, like I said, the first time on a national media. So CBN, this is a foundational article, and CBN did one from last September. Then a publication called Forward, this is an Israeli-American publication, a newspaper, from last September. And then the CBS piece was just this last weekend. So we're going to kind of cover it in all these phases. And if you know, people do ask me about this. What do you think about these red heifers? And people might ask you too. And I think it's good to know. I think more and more this is going to happen. So anyway, CBN, prophetic anticipation builds. Unblemished red heifers for temple ceremony soon come of age. Now, this is from last March. This is a year ago. And it says, last September, five red heifers arrived in Israel amid great fanfare because some Jews and Gentiles believe red heifers are a key element leading to the building of the third Jewish temple. The Book of Numbers explains that ashes of the red heifer are used to purify priests for their service in the temple. Now this is Numbers 19, 1-5. Now the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, "This is the ordinance of the law which the Lord has commanded, saying, speak to the children of Israel, that they bring you a red heifer without blemish, in which there is no defect, and on which a yoke has never come. You shall give it to Eleazar the priest, that he may take it outside the camp, and it shall be slaughtered before him. Its offal shall be burned for the water of purification. It is for purifying from sin." Again, Numbers 19. These red heifers are now between 1.5 and 2 years old, a year ago. To replicate the ceremony mentioned in the Bible, they need to be 3 years old, which they will be now this year. And within that time span, they cannot have a blemish or anything that would disqualify them for the ceremony or even one white or black hair. According to those working on the project, the ceremony of the red heifer needs to be performed on the Mount of Olives and in a place that would have looked directly into where the temple stood. The land directly east of the Temple Mount purchased 12 years ago meets both of those standards. Rabbi Yitzhak Mamo owns the land on the Mount of Olives. He is with Yuvni Yerushalayim, a group that preserves Israel's history and works to educate future generations. Concerning the specifics of the land, he told CBN News, it had to be exactly at the front of the place that the priest that made the ceremony can see the Holy of Holies places. Let me read that again. Concerning the specifics of the land, he told CBN, it has to be exactly at the front of the place that the priest that made the ceremony can see the Holy of the Holy place. All right, that's better. Rabbi Mamo said, and we hope that in a year and a half from today, that will be this spring, we can make here in this area the ceremony of the red heifer that actually will be the first step. The first attempt to the temple. All right, there's just something missing. I'm sorry, because of the way this was printed out. All right. The Temple Institute actually has 9 pure priests, the rabbi explained. They were not born in a hospital. They were born at home because they are priests. So anyway, they don't go to any cemetery, and the parents keep them in a situation that they will not get to any cemetery or go to any other problematic place. Okay, what he's saying is they cannot be defiled by touching anything dead. And so these priests are being prepared for this service. He added, and they are pure and they are waiting. So we have the priest, we have the red heifer, we have the land. Everything is ready. We just need to wait another year and a half. So now that brings us to this spring, like I said. Brian Stinson from Bone, Israel helped find the red heifers in the United States. We believe it's very likely that the ceremony would happen sometime on Passover 2024. Now that would be April this year, April 22nd to the 30th. To the possibility of Shavuot 2024. Now that's June 11 to 13. Somewhere in that timeline, the cows would be old enough and at the proper time for the ceremony. Stinson believes this would be the first possibility for such a ceremony in 2,000 years, and that the process towards building a third temple began when the Jewish people started their return to the land. Then in 1948, in one day, they were reborn as a nation, and nobody said that could happen. And then you move forward, and Israel continues to be this strong nation, and these prophecies are starting to be fulfilled, and it's just incredible. The evidence of what God is doing with Jerusalem is at the center of that. The temple is the center of Jerusalem. So how can it happen? How will it happen? I don't think anyone really knows for sure, but they certainly are working that direction. He maintains the temple is meant to be a house of prayer for all nations. I'm going to talk a little bit about that coming up. In the Bible, it says when Solomon built the first temple, he said, this is a house of worship for all nations, and that's what the temple is. And I think a lot of people think it's just a Jewish temple, but that's not true. It's for all nations on earth. I just have a few more seconds here. I want to get in a little bit of what Joel Rosenberg said about the third temple. He said, Jews are actually divided between, does the Messiah himself come and build the temple, or do you build the temple and the Messiah comes? So among those Jews, Israelis who care, they're divided into two different camps. Rosenberg added, I think most Israelis don't think about it, and they don't care. They get a little worried with talk about a third temple because we already have enough trouble. And true that is. He also sees various points of view throughout the Christian community, those who think about it and those who don't. But those who do believe it will be built before Jesus returns, not necessarily before the rapture, but before the second coming. So I'm going to pick up a little bit with what Joel Rosenberg said when we come back. We have to take a break for a couple of minutes here. And then I'm going to go on to a couple different perspectives on this because I want you to understand what this actually means now that it's out there. So I will be back in 2 minutes. We're going to talk more about that, a Hal Lindsey article. We're going to talk about COVID injuries, the WEF, and whatever we have time for. So my name is Mary Danielson. It's Headline Day. Stay with me.
Your prayers and ongoing financial support keep our Truth at Any Cost mission strong. StandUpForTheTruth.com.
Welcome back to Stand Up For The Truth for March the 12th. It's a Tuesday, and it's spring-like again in Wisconsin. I can't believe these temperatures, at least for now. Talking about, these red heifers that are getting some press, including secular press, because of the war that's going on there. And you know, the press likes to use any old kind of gasoline and put it on the fire, which is what they did. And I'm going to get to that. I have three articles on this. Some of it's a little repetitive, so bear with me on that. But I started out with CBN. This was a year ago, when the heifers weren't old enough to even be considered. Well, a year later, they are still being considered. And Joel Rosenberg ends this article on CBN, talking about the different views among Jews. They don't even think about it because it is a secular nation at this time, at least for now. And he talks about Christians, I think, don't think about the Third Temple. He says, but those who do believe that it will be built before Jesus returns for the Second Coming, not necessarily before the rapture, but definitely before the Second Coming, and the Antichrist will take over that Third Temple during the tribulation and try to rule the world from there. He continued, could it happen in our lifetime? To me, that's intriguing. I think we don't know. But there are some Jews who are really making preparations to get ready for that moment, and that's something to watch closely. And something else that I thought of, because they do go to these American ranchers for these cattle, and a lot of these Christians are anxious to help them with this. And as I think it through, I think to myself, this is the Tribulation Temple. This is the Antichrist. And I have mixed feelings about Christians helping out with this or being part of this or promoting it. I don't know. I'm throwing that out there into the stratosphere. I don't know what I think about that. And anyway, next article. This is from an independent Jewish American newspaper that's been around since 1897. It started out being written in Yiddish. But the headline here, this gal is Mira Fox, is her name. The foreword is the name of the newspaper. And she says, holy cow, can one heifer herald the Third Temple and the end of the world as we know it? So that's another perspective on that. And she says, the days of the Third Temple are apparently upon us, all thanks to a cow. In the Bible, red heifers feature heavily in temple law. They have to be pure red, without even two hairs of another color, without any form of blemish. They even have to have red hooves. And they're an essential part of sacrificial purity laws. Their ashes are required to purify the temple's priests and altars. And so she goes on to say, in Judaism, this era is prophesied to mean the coming of a time that includes the return of biblical laws of purity, allowing for truly holy life. For evangelical Christians, it would herald the end times, the return of Jesus to earth, and the rapture. This belief has long driven Christian Zionism and Christian lobbying on behalf of Israel. And then he goes to this gal, Mira, goes on to talk about the Temple Institute. And I've been there. If you've been to Israel, you've been there. It's a Jerusalem-based organization led by Orthodox Rabbi Chaim Richman. Advocates for building the Third Temple. They have said they will be examining the calf carefully as it grows for blemishes in order to see if the time is right to start construction. This particular calf is not an accident. The Temple Institute has been working to breed a sacrificial cow for years after importing red Angus cows from Nebraska. The most recent calf is not the first birth that has been announced with great excitement, and several have also been shipped from the U.S., where evangelical Christian farmers support the Jewish efforts. Excuse me. And she says, while some believe the Third Temple can only be built in the Messianic Age, groups like the Temple Institute believe that they have to take the prophecy into their own hands. This long-prayed-for epic can only come once the temple has been rebuilt and purified, and they believe that is up to them. So there are a couple different temple groups. The Institute has their own podcast to talk about that. And also, then this article ends with, geopolitics is not the only issue, which we all know who are listening in on this. Jewish scholars, including the Israeli rabbinate, have ruled that the grounds are off-limit to Jews, the Holy of Holies, the inner portion of the temple, access to which was restricted only to purified high priests, is unknown after the temple's destruction. So there are a lot of complications here. It'll happen. It's going to happen in God's timing, but it's interesting to see that this is, you know, there is some excitement about this. And she closes with, but to true believers, the controversy makes no sense. They believe that the Third Temple will be a source of God for all people to usher in an era of world peace, despite evidence to the contrary. Peace, peace, when there is no peace, Ezekiel 13. Finally, the CBS article, which is from just a couple of days ago. What these red cows from Texas have to do with war and peace in the Middle East. And it starts like this. When Hamas spokesman Abu Abeda began a speech marking the 100th day of war in Gaza, one confounding yet eye-opening proclamation escaped the headlines, listing the motives for the Palestinian militant group's October 7th massacre. He accused the Jews of bringing red cows to the Holy Land. So not only is CBS News reporting on it and spinning it, but they say that this was part of the reason for the attacks on October the 7th all along. I had not heard that very much, but there it is. The cows he was talking about are red heifers, which now graze at a secure, undisclosed location in the Israeli-occupied West Bank. Some Jews and Christians believe they're the key to rebuilding the temple and beckoning the Messiah. I think that's very, very interesting that they say, because when this first started, they were talking about Al-Aqsa, that this was an action, this war on October 7th was an action to preserve the Al-Aqsa. And a lot of us are scratching our heads at that because it didn't seem like that had to do with anything. Of course, they don't really need a reason to attack Israel. And CBS, of course, calls it the Israeli-occupied West Bank. And they talk about Yitzhak Mamo of Yuvni Yerushalayim, and they're committed to seeing this new temple, and they're panicky. I could tell that from the guy who was doing the interview. Texas Red Angus, he says, we found them in Texas. And then it says, to bypass strict laws in place at the time that bans the export of U.S. cattle to Israel, the heifers were classified as pets. But to those following biblical commandments, the cows are no laughing matter, he added, stressing that it was not a publicity stunt. He said, Harry Potter's a good story. The Bible is not a story. It's God leading us. So the biggest thing that struck me when this gentleman was interviewing him on CBS was, are you worried about what the Gazans and Hamas will think about this? So he seemed to be alarmed that Hamas was not going to like this, and they already don't like this. And I had to kind of laugh at that point, because of course they're not going to like it. None of Israel's enemies like anything they do, so they might as well just do what they need to do, because nobody will like what they do. Here's the quote. Hamas dubbed October 7th, a terror attack, the Al-Aqsa Wave. And the group's emblem features the Dome of the Rock behind two crossed swords. Al-Aqsa Mosque belongs to all Muslims, he says. You will find reactions from Indonesia to Toronto to New York over this. There are 2 billion Muslims worldwide. He told CBS that removing Al-Aqsa or the Dome of the Rock was unimaginable and warned it would open a Pandora's box that no one can close. Jewish activists are not deterred by Hamas's massacre or the ongoing war. And some have been using the conflict to promote their cause to the U.S. Again, what will Hamas think about this? And I admit that I did laugh out loud at that point. So that's basically what's going on there. Hal Lindsey has a great article. It says, the world's hatred for Jews, Zion, God, and his Messiah are inextricably linked. Get this. A Salt Lake City bar has recently instituted a no Zionists allowed policy. The bar owner wrote on social media, we are pleased to announce that we are banning all Zionists forever from our establishments. Zionism is hate speech. It is white supremacy and has nothing to do with the beautiful Jewish faith. Oh, really? Well, that's one of the most ignorant things that I have ever heard. And Hal Lindsey goes on to say, so he hates Zionists, but he finds the Jewish faith beautiful. He thinks Zionism is unrelated to Judaism. I have no idea what his motivations are. But his statements have become a common theme, get this, among those who want to be anti-Jewish without seeming to be anti-Semitic. How tricky. Zion is part and parcel not only of the Jewish faith, but of the Jewish soul. And Hal goes on to quote Psalm 137, and he says, Psalm 137 expresses the intense feelings of the Jewish captives taken from their homes by Babylonians. Verses 1 and 3 say, by the rivers of Babylon, there we sat down and wept when we remembered Zion. Our captors demanded of us songs and our tormentors mirth, saying, sing us one of the songs of Zion. Even the Babylonians knew that the word Zion represented something deep and precious to the Jews. The captives equated singing about Zion to singing the Lord's song. In verse 4 they ask, how can we sing the Lord's song in a foreign land? Verse 5 and 6 say, if I forget about you, O Jerusalem, may my right hand forget her skill. May my tongue cleave to the roof of my mouth if I do not remember you, if I do not exalt Jerusalem above my chief joy. In Jeremiah 25, 11 and 12, God said that Babylon would fall only 70 years later. All those who oppress Israel are eventually brought low. Someday it will happen on a global stage for a fully redeemed Israel, because Isaiah 60, 14 promises to Israel, and the sons of those who afflicted you will come bowing to you, and all those who despised you will bow themselves at the soles of your feet, and they will call you the city of the Lord, the Zion of the Holy One of Israel. So Hal's point, Zionism encompasses Christians as well as Jews. To rail against Zion is to rail against God. Psalm 132, 13, the Lord has chosen Zion. Psalm 48, 2, Zion, the city of the great king. He closes with, I realize even some Jews say they are against Zionism. That's not surprising. A growing number of Americans hate America. Those people can rightly be called anti-American in the same way a Jew can be an anti-Zionist, but it doesn't make them any less Jewish. Absolutely. But I can't believe this guy is going to get away with that. No one likes to be called an anti-Semite, apparently, so now they're anti-Zionist. So watch for more of that to heat up. Oh, my. Semantics. All right, a couple more articles if I have time here. A new COVID law. Oh, this is a good thing. Finally, is what I'm going to say about this. Most of us probably know someone or know of someone suffering from ill effects of those jabs. It could be mild, it could be severe, or unfortunately, some people are walking time bombs of some health event to be named later. It's beyond tragic. It's just, well, it's wicked. And I think a lot of us feel, not that this will solve the problem, but somebody needs to ante up and admit and pay for the lies and the utter disregard for human life, treating humans like guinea pigs. And we all know that this is true. This article is from childrenshealthdefense.org. That's RFK Jr.'s site, The Defender. And his the emails that you get are really worth it. A lot of great, great headlines. Very well-written articles and videos. Childrenshealthdefense.org. New law would make COVID vaccine makers liable for injuries and death. Representative Chip Roy, Republican from Texas, on Tuesday introduced a bill that would allow Americans to sue the manufacturers of COVID-19 vaccines for vaccine-related adverse events, including deaths, by removing the vaccine maker's liability shield. The Let Injured Americans Be Legally Empowered Act, or LIABLE, it's actually an acronym for LIABLE, would allow Americans who took vaccines that were misleadingly promoted and forced onto many Americans via federal mandates to pursue civil litigation for their injuries, according to a summary of the bill publicized by Fox News. Quote, these vaccines were given emergency use authorization unilaterally and did not go through the normal FDA approval process, the summary stated. Commenting on the proposed legislation, Children's Health Defense President Mary Holland said, the damages and fatalities caused by COVID-19 vaccine demand accountability. This legislation represents a critical milestone in rectifying these injustices and paving the way for a more accountable future. This legislation is crucial for holding vaccine manufacturers accountable. According to Roy's office, COVID-19 vaccines are considered countermeasures under the Public Readiness and Preparedness, or PREP, Act, which broadly shields their manufacturers from civil liability related to losses stemming from the vaccines. Instead, injured Americans must seek relief under the Onerous Countermeasures Injury Compensation Program, CICP, but only 11 claims have been paid out of CICP. Holland said CICP is wholly inadequate and inconsistent with constitutional principles involving in providing just redress. The proposed legislation would remove all federal liability protections for the COVID-19 vaccine, preserve the ability of injured Americans to access pre-existing compensation programs, such as the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, and would be retroactive, allowing Americans vaccinated and injured before the bill's passage to sue. I hope they have deep pockets. In a statement, Roy said, the long train of abuses committed by the government and public health establishment in response to COVID-19 will continue to impact American people for years to come. As a result, Roy said he is introducing the Libel Act to empower Americans to remove crony federal liability protections for COVID-19 vaccine manufacturers and empower injured Americans. American people deserve justice for the infringement on their personal medical freedom, and those medically harmed deserve restitution. REACT 19, a nonprofit organization that advocates on behalf of vaccine injury victims, also welcomed the proposed legislation. Dr. Joel Walskog, a Wisconsin orthopedic surgeon who no longer practices due to injuries he sustained from Moderna, is co-chair of the organization. Again, this is Senator Chip Roy, Republican from Texas. According to Fox News, the PrEP Act limits liability for the manufacturing, development, and distribution of medical countermeasures related to a public health emergency. Millions of Americans were forced to take a shot out of fear of losing their livelihoods and under false pretenses. He contrasted the 11 claims compensated by CICP with the 700 million doses of COVID-19 vaccines which have been administered in the U.S. Walskog said the CICP has a 98% denial rate as of January 1st, and a total of $41,000 has been paid out for the 11 claims, which is, of course, ridiculous. And I'll close with this. In The Blaze, commentator and author Daniel Horowitz said, should a product that is completely funded, marketed, monopolized, and mandated by the government be less liable than Toyota for its airbags? Yes, well, or anything else that, you know, any other company that would be liable for anything. Again, it would remove all federal liability protections, which is really good news. I guess that's basically it on this. That's worth watching to see if this goes through. That would be great. All I can say is on behalf of all the people that are suffering from things that they don't even realize may have been from that. It really has been a Pandora's box. A lot of people with immune issues, things that, you know, then ladies with the fertility issues. I don't know how they're going to quantify this into money, but like I said, somebody better have a whole lot of it if this goes through. All right, another article we have a little time for. The WEF demands governments make concerted effort to silence critics. Oh, that should be interesting. The World Economic Forum has issued a demand for governments and big tech companies to make a concerted effort to silence critics of the unelected globalist organization's agenda. The WEF claims that it is seeking to stamp out wrongthink as part of its alleged fight against so-called disinformation. I was going to insert a snarky comment there on wrongthink, but I'm sure that they believe and feel that we all engage in that every single day. I just like the word. Klaus Schwab's organization is now insisting that global governments, media, tech companies, and civil society must ramp up efforts for the anti-disinformation campaign. Now, we all know that disinformation, misinformation, and flat-out lies are, it's all very subjective. If you're on Facebook and you've ever been thrown in Facebook jail, you know it is subjective. And it is no different here. In a statement, the WEF argues that disinformation is a threat to our ecosystem. The Switzerland-based group wants experts, quote-unquote, to explain to world leaders and bureaucrats how to curb opposition to the globalist agenda. In a post on its website, the WEF praises the European Union and its draconian EU Digital Services Act, or DSA. Some of the key components of the DSA, which was drafted by unelected bureaucrats, have led to the legislation being dubbed the censorship law. However, the WEF is demanding answers from other nations who have yet to push through similar tyrannical measures. It's coming. You know it's coming. The WEF blames digital technology and what it calls a fragmented media ecosystem. He's making that up. That doesn't make any sense. For the supposedly unprecedented amounts of disinformation. In a statement on the website, they use fear-mongering about artificial intelligence to advance its disinformation agenda. However, while raising the alarm about the so-called threat of disinformation, at no point do they take issue with provably false information. Wow, this makes my head spin. The organization and its globalist allies appear laser-focused on eliminating disinformation and misinformation, but they never refer to information that is patently either true or false. And, of course, truth has never been part of the agenda. So I apologize if your head's spinning, too. During a panel at the recent Davos meeting, EU bureaucrats and the New York Times and Wall Street Journal head honchos got passed off as truth experts. The corporate media elites that spoke on the Davos panel similarly parroted the WEF's talking points. So basically, it's just more effort to silence us on so many fronts. And this is just one. I mean, this isn't new to you. This isn't new to me. But the fact that it makes the news when you can see behind the fascist curtain is really, really interesting. And here's one more here. This is from Liberty Sentinel. Send your neighbor to prison for wrong speak. There's that word again. Get $2,000 from taxpayers in the state of Washington. Oh, my gosh. 1984, 2024, it's all the same if you ask me. And it says here, a bill has moved through the Washington State Senate and House and is headed to Governor Jay Inslee's desk. Since he is an extreme leftist with no respect for others, Inslee is expected to sign this bill, thus creating a statute that violates at least the following constitutional rights. 1, the right to confront your accuser. 2, freedom of speech. 3, freedom of thought, which is implied in the First Amendment. 4, freedom of religion. 5, freedom of the press, to name a few that quickly come to mind. Oh, and this article on Liberty Sentinel is written by Diane Gruber. All right, Senate Bill 5427, after it's signed into law, would allow private individuals, not limited to American citizens, okay, just private individuals, to report bias incidents to the state attorney general's office with the possibility of receiving up to $2,000 of taxpayer money for a non-criminal incident. The bill was very clear. This is a non-crime, which they will then forward to local law enforcement to investigate. What's to investigate? No crime, no investigation. And our heads continue to spin on this Tuesday. Can you imagine law enforcement people being called out for that? I think they have bigger fish to fry. It goes on to say the progressives and Marxists who sponsored this bill say it's intended to help, quote, victims of hate crimes before a crime even happens. In reality, SB 5427 would create a tattletale hotline, undermine legitimate criminal investigations, and freeze, not just chill, speech and the press in Washington state. People will stop talking to others and writing to others except very close friends and relatives for fear that some greedy soul will report them to Washington's version of Gestapo. I can't even imagine what this will do to the press in the state of Washington. I see nothing in the bill that excludes writers, editors, columnists, and reporters from being targeted. This is absolute insanity. But that's Washington state for you. It says, spend 5 minutes on Twitter on any given day, and I assure someone would say something offensive under this law that we could call a hate crime and collect $2,000 from the Attorney General. Conservative Ladies of Washington founder and president Julie Barrett told the Senate Ways and Means Committee at a February 20th public hearing, it potentially targets people for actions they don't like, but are not actually hate crimes. In collaboration with bills like HB 1333, this would create a tattletale hotline to report people one doesn't agree with or doesn't like. Well, tattletale state is what I would call it. One anti-First Amendment proponent said the $2,000 is not a reward to people who report the hotline, and it's meant to cover damages incurred. Damages? What damages? How can words or an expression of animus send someone to the doctor? Well, in this snowflake culture, I suppose, and it goes on to say, picture this. The local sheriff's deputy shows up at your home to question you about a bias incident you allegedly committed. The statute prohibits him from telling you who reported you. So you stand there with a dumb look on your face because you have no clue what he's talking about. He's not allowed to answer any question that may give away who the person is. since they did not scream at you, bias incident at the time you wrong spoke, you have no idea when, where, who, what, why, or how. You have no way to defend yourself. Your name goes on the state's bias incident list and remains there until you die. If another person turns you in for a different bias incident, it's anyone's guess at this point what the Gestapo in the AG's office will do to you. The only words out of your mouth should be, lawyer. This bill directs the state's attorney general's office to create a hotline serving at least 3 Washington counties by 2025 and all counties by 2027. And he says, it's time to invest in a U-Haul franchise. And Washington State has virtually had no hate crimes among a population of 7.7 million people. It's just absurd. And I thought we'd end on an absurd note. So now that I'm back looking at headlines, I think I'm ready to go back on vacation and look at the ocean. Anyway, that's it for today. I also want to mention that the Christian Home Educators of Wisconsin, their 2024 statewide homeschool conference at the Dells is coming up April 4th and 5th. Heidi St. John, Israel Wayne, Kim Sorgius, Alex McFarland, Jay Siegert, Julaine Appling, and many, many more. Go to Q90FM.com for details. Therefore, my beloved brethren, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that your labor is not in vain in the Lord. 1 Corinthians 15:58. Thanks for joining me today. I will be back on Thursday.